Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.
Good evening. I'm Greg Caponia, and with me is our co-host, Edward Meehan. HealthBeat is a program that's going to be taking a deeper look at healthcare in the Lehigh Valley. We also welcome Ronald Dendist, the program officer of the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Today, let's take a look at the determinants of health. Doctors today really need to not only be healthcare providers, but they have to be social scientists, don't they?
Very, very true. Very much so, Greg. And I think the logical kind of progression of how you think about disease and health pretty much takes you down a pathway of needing to know more about the life of that individual person, that individual patient, but also the community where that patient resides. And I think that there's been an evolution of that for quite some time. In fact, I was thinking about this this week about where did I first learn about these kinds of concepts. And there was a fellow named Al Tarlov. Al was the chairman of medicine at the University of Chicago, so a very prominent medical educator. And I met him when he was the president of the Kaiser Family Foundation, because Kaiser Family Foundation did some work with Ryder Poole Foundation and Poole Healthcare Trust. And he wrote really sort of, I think, one of the first early documentations of the idea that physicians in their medical education training needed to have more of a firm background in the social sciences. It was an article all the way back in 1993, The Coming Influence of Social Sciences Perspective on Medical Education. And so, you know, the premise was that in order to be able to better take care of patients, there need to be a reconceptualization of how you define health, not just disease, but how do you think about a broader scope on health? How do you think about strategies that would enable you as a healthcare provider to think about the context in which that patient lives and the other things going on, asking the 1993 question of why is healthcare cost so much when our outcomes on health status are not so good? Current question, even though it was asked all the way back in 1993, and then a more broad understanding of what the real causes of illness are. So absolutely, Greg, increasingly we need to be thinking about the social aspects, the quality of life and community wraparound things that impact an individual's health, in addition to taking care of patients just from a biologic or a clinical perspective.
Fortunately, I had an opportunity to read an article by Dr. Tarlov, and the thing that struck me the most was what was prevalent in the 90s still seems to be prevalent today. Is this a 100-year evolution that we're going to have to experience? I mean, we're looking at comparisons to 50 years ago, and we've made some progress, but we're not where you think we would be. Why do you think that is?
I think that the alignments have not happened properly for many, many reasons. You know, just go back to the 1960s where essentially so many of the programs that fund health, federally supported programs, Medicare and Medicaid, were enacted. And there was a general sense, and I'm kind of paraphrasing a health economist named Uwe Reinhardt, who I remember so distinctly saying, you know, the federal government said, we need to improve health. And they asked hospitals and doctors, what do you need? And hospital administrators and doctors being very smart people saying, we need a lot more money. So we threw a lot of money at health care. And we, I think, lack the appreciation that while health care is an important component part, there are other societal factors that determine health. And while we make an academic run at it, as Dr. Tarlov has, and while we kind of will think about it sometimes from an academic perspective, sometimes from a just peripheral perspective, we have not really assimilated it into how we think about allocating resources and designing strategy and implementation for health improvement.
I was with some friends and recently contacted by a contact tracer, a doctor, and they wanted to know about some of the people that I had been exposed to, or, you know, it was one of these things where you were with somebody who might have had COVID. Tell me who you've been with. And also they wanted to know my evaluation of what I thought their health was like. And they asked me some questions about, oh, that would have gotten to body mass. And do they smoke? Or do you know if they smoke? Interesting things that you never really thought about getting the flu, if you would, or something like COVID. And now these are all becoming very important to us.
Sure. You know, while we're going down memory lane, I was thinking also about a long time ago, the very first time I was called on the carpet by a boss. I was working with the New York City Health Department. This is in the mid-1970s. And it was an internship that turned into a part-time job while I was in college. And I was assigned to the Columbia Dental School. And my job was to precept third-year dental students for their kind of community exposure. So I was taking third-year dental students down to the Harlem Daycare mm-hmm. Center, down to a community center in about the 150s off of Broadway. So you picture, I'm supposed to meet three dental students in August at 8 o'clock in the morning outside the community center, and we're going to be working with about 20 teenagers. And it's 92 degrees and 85% humidity, and the A train is a sauna. And I climb out of the subway. I get to the community center. The kids are all out on the stoops. The day's lunch is on the curb. God knows when it got delivered, but the milk is already rancid. Mm-hmm. And it's getting on 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, and all of these kids are stoned. And I'm looking at three dental students who are there to talk about teeth brushing and flossing. And I have to call an audible as a 20-year-old preceptor and say, time out. We're going to do what is now known as harm reduction. I didn't know the term at the time, but essentially, let's get these kids indoors. Let's get them safe. Let's get them seated. And let's talk about anything we need to talk about. And the experience for me was I had no choice but to say, I know these dental students, their assignment is to teach about brushing and flossing, but we've got to do something different right now. So needless to say, I had called on the carpet by the chairman of the department saying, what are you doing? These dental students are supposed to be learning about, you know, oral health to teach kids. So anyway, I was thinking about it recently saying, you know, to your prior question, we're still at a place where what your job description says or what your grant funding is for may be a good thing. But I think there are many nurses and teachers and social workers and first responders who know, wow, you know, this is what my job description says, but there's so many other things I've got to think about to serve the people that I'm serving.
So, Ron, as the program director, you look at this sort of messy buffet of issues that have to do with health and health maintenance and maybe looking at health in a holistic way. How do we start to even fix this? 50 years later, how do we start to fix this?
A couple of things. One is we need to understand the problem better. And I think, you know, oftentimes with this, we need to kind of look back to see how did we get to the place that we're at right now. And it's been really interesting kind of studying this transition over time, because up until really the 1950s, the things that caused us the most health harm were communicable diseases. It was dysentery, it was the flu, it was tuberculosis, communicable diseases that you would pick up because you were in a crowded area. And our healthcare system, which, you know, was really the emergence of public health around how do we remove these factors that started changing after World War II, when the suburbs started emerging, when TV and television, we became a more sedentary society. Our food was processed instead of straight from the farm. So, you know, all of a sudden, what starts killing us after the 1950s are chronic disease, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, asthma, stroke, et cetera. And as Ed was describing, our healthcare starts reacting to those chronic diseases, and we get away from the determinants that causes them. And so we start coming up with the sophisticated ways of addressing cancer and diabetes, diseases we have not cured. We've just gotten much better at managing them. So kind of getting back to, you know, basics, and it's you know, interesting that you're talking about contact tracing, about someone contacting you and talking about these social determinants, getting back to those factors of looking at societal issues that cause and contribute to cancer, diabetes, all of these chronic diseases that are killing us. You know, historically, of how we've addressed health concerns, I think becomes relevant in the 2000s.
Are you suggesting that we're reactive instead of proactive still?
We're getting more proactive, but our systems have been built to react to someone after they get diabetes rather than working to prevent the diabetes from occurring. So, yes, and I think that pendulum is starting to swing back, you know, into the preventive areas.
So we're back to food education.
We're back to understanding the problems deeper. And yes, we can look at across America, across Pennsylvania, across Lehigh County, you know, okay, what does food look like? What does housing look like? What does education look like? And again, what we're starting to learn here is we can learn much from the data, but if we truly want to understand, we've got to get down to the neighborhood level. We've got to understand what's happening in the census block. You know, just looking at education, you know, when you look at education metrics across the Lehigh Valley, they're relatively good. But if you go into the Allentown School District, the Bethlehem Area School District, the Easton Area School District, and you start separating some of the urban schools versus suburban schools, you see dramatically different data that obviously have an incredible impact on how healthy we are and how healthy we will remain.
When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to ask you both about the census being halted at this time. You are listening to WDIY, and this is HealthBeat.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Marcy Lightwood. Local news, weather, and traffic is provided by the WDIY news team during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, Monday through Friday. We also bring you news and entertainment Saturday and Sunday with Weekend Edition.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Pocono Cheesecake Factory, now offering curbside pickup of a variety of cheesecake, cookies, pastries, and gourmet treats. For 35 years, helping schools, clubs, and other nonprofit organizations throughout the Lehigh Valley and Northeast Pennsylvania achieve their fundraising goals. The Pocono Cheesecake Factory, since 1985, love at first bite. For more information, PoconoCheesecake.com.
Hi, this is Janice Ian. Every Monday night at 7 o'clock, WDIY is keeping the golden age of folk music alive with folk classics. Your host, Steve Aronson, features music from all the singer-songwriters, including yours truly, from the groups, with a little folk rock sprinkled in for good measure. Folk Classics is the show to listen to, Mondays at 7 p.m. on WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Health Beat. I'm with Edward Meehan and Ronald Dentist. Gentlemen, Allentown, at the end of the census, will have approximately a 64.5% representation or count, if you will. If we're trying to use data to read our health needs, what does this mean?
Greg, I'm hardly expert on census data, but I'm a big fan of having good quantifiable empirical information to work with and data that can be helpful in making decisions and allocating resources. And census data, if anyone has ever been involved in grant writing or thinking about funding formulas, knows that census data is how frequently government formulas are determined for funding and asset allocation. Frequently, if you're looking for grants, census data is how you determine the need of a population. So if you're undercounting your population, you're really running the risk of shortchanging yourself for And I'm talking about, you know, resources from outside the Valley. We're shortchanging ourselves on the chance to leverage resources from outside the Lehigh Valley to come here and support our efforts.
And this isn't necessarily because the people weren't filling out the census forms. It's just that the census was stopped in October. I believe the last day was around the 15th of October. We just stopped taking census data.
Well, as Ron was mentioning just earlier in this conversation, when you think about how you need to have disaggregated data and get down to a neighborhood level, almost always, regardless of the topic, we will find that the folks who aren't counted are the ones who are the most difficult to reach, the ones who are the most disenfranchised, the ones who are most isolated or alienated by geography, by race, by income, by education. So I can't tell you definitively, but I would have a high suspicion that if you're undercounting, it's going to be the most needy people in the Lehigh Valley who aren't being counted, which, of course, is not a good thing for any of us. Because, again, going back to how do you allocate resources, if you're undercounting, you're shortchanging your ability to really think critically about how you can get what you need in order to just begin to address the challenges.
Our news director, James Johnson, told me that our past representation in Allentown was about 68%. So it's a drop of 4% and still, you know, figures getting close to half. We're looking at census data that's going to take us forward for the next 10 years. Guys, what do we do? Any suggestions? Ron?
The census data are the best data we have. And so it's always nice to strive for perfection. But I think census data still give us a good idea of where the clusters of social determinant issues are. So I still think that census data become really useful to us. In addition to that, I think there are other ways of measuring some of these factors, and these are more locally generated quantitative data. The Planning Commission collects data. Every school district collects data. So we have ways of describing some of these things. Cities are collecting data around housing. So there are other data sources other than census data that will help us understand these problems better. And, you know, I want to emphasize the need to not only be looking at the hard quantitative data, but also the ability of getting community voice into this work, more of that qualitative data that give us a much richer understanding of why 65% of the folks are filling out census information, why graduation rates are lower than we want, why homelessness is on the increase. That rich voice of community becomes critical in this work, as well as taking advantage of every single data source to describe our communities.
Fortunately, the Lehigh Valley has citizens that care about their communities, and they're willing to give money to help a cause, as we know, as the Ryder Pool Foundation serves to do. If you're a listener and hearing this show, and you say, okay, I've got a little bit of extra money here, how would you deploy it? What would you do to help the health situation?
I want to look at all resources here, not just cash. I mean, look, there are plenty of nonprofits that you're able to work with, but what do you do as an individual to improve your behavior and make changes that you need to do to remain healthy? And then what role do you play in the community that you live in, that you work in, that you worship in, that you play in? You know, what impact do you have, and how do you build community in every aspect of your life?
So what you're saying is there's a lot of volunteer work that needs to be done also.
Volunteer work and just civic work. Hey, when I was growing up, we knew every single person in our neighborhood. To my detriment, I couldn't get away with anything because Mrs. Smith was on the phone with my mom every time something happened. Everybody knew each other in their own neighborhood. Does that still exist? One of the interesting factors is, years ago, the porches and decks were at the front of the house. And now the trend is put the porches and decks in the back of the house. People are spending time in their backyard, not on the front porch. So getting to know your neighbors is a real simple way of building community and improving health.
Do you think it's our work schedules that are keeping us away from our neighbors and learning about their needs?
It's a number of things, Greg. There's all kinds of things that have happened in the last 40, 50 years that have changed that. You know, think about, you know, the folks who would sit out on the stoop and talk with neighbors, and suburban homes, the front of suburban homes is not exactly how people enter and exit, so you barely get a chance to interact. Everyone sits in their own deck out back. It's a little different than, say, 50 or so years ago. To your prior question, you know, the Lehigh Valley is a very generous place. Folks really care. Folks really give. It's what makes the Lehigh Valley really, really special. And as Ron was saying, there's any number of not-for-profits. Pick your favorite organization if you want to fund it. But it's an instance where money is great, thank you very much, but it's not going to get it absolutely done. It's good to build community, as Ron is saying. But I think it's also good to be asking the broader questions about how, you know, are we making a difference here? Not just by agency by agency, but collectively, are we moving the needle? Can we agree on what the needle is to move? And can we really think about what are the things that are important to us that would make a difference? Those are conversations we don't have very often, and they're becoming increasingly important. We can't improve the health of the entire Lehigh Valley unless we think about the most disadvantaged people who have the poorest health in the Lehigh Valley. We're not going to improve our aggregate educational attainment unless we really think about the school districts and the schools that have, you know, the poorest numbers when it comes to high school graduation or reading on fourth grade level. Or where there are so many things that we should be talking about at a broader scale that get us to the social determinants of health, but they also get us to things that would be in our collective best interest in improving quality of life. So for caring, thinking people like your audience, the donation to a not-for-profit is fantastic. There's so many good not-for-profits to give to, and that's great. Thank you so much. But in addition to that, I think it's worth having the broader conversation and say, how are we doing on safe and healthy housing? And we talk about mental health as an extremely important issue, but it gets talked about in the abstract without thinking about, are there things that we could do that could lower the stressors on people's lives, particularly during COVID?
I'm asking you both for solutions to very difficult problems, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I am getting something from this in that what you are encouraging us to do is to know our neighbors in order to understand their health. My key takeaway so far is that volunteer to help, get out, know your neighbors, build your community, because a community more in touch with each other is a healthier community, because perhaps you understand why somebody may be ailing or acting in a way or doing something detrimental to their health.
I think about when I used to do this with graduate students, there was I will not remember the woman's name, an older woman in Allentown who liked to knit. And she'd knit mittens and she'd knit scarves and she just enjoyed doing that. And she'd do it and then she would give those to kids at some of the elementary schools in the Allentown School District. And when I'd talk with graduate students, I'd say, who's helping who?
Right.
You know, she's productively doing something that she enjoys and gets great satisfaction out of it. So she's not thinking, oh, I'm such a magnanimous person, I'm doing this work. She's doing it because she's getting something out of it. So I think for me, it's a question of citizen involvement. Do what you love. Participate in community to the best of your ability. You know, help others. Sure, there's a desire to help other people. But in addition to that, it's good for your own health as well.
We have a person at the station, Allison, who makes masks at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Makes her feel good, I think. Well, I know. And there's a lot of people running around with Allison's masks. And it gives her something to do at a time when she can't necessarily be with her family. And I think it's a nice example of how she is occupying herself in a way that is so helpful to the community. And I'll tell you, I bet she's made a couple hundred of these masks. I wonder how many
Isn't
people don't have the COVID-19 problem because Allison is making a mask. And so we can all do our part in trying to do something like that, whether it's volunteering or producing something that might make us mentally happier. I think when I volunteer, I know I feel much better when I come home. I think the psychology of helping out gets you out of your own head. I guess maybe we're trying to convince people to get out and do something for themselves and do something for their community to help them get outside of their heads during this very difficult time.
Absolutely. And you can look at it from a variety of ways. It's going to strengthen the economy of the Lehigh Valley. It's going to increase housing values. It's going to decrease a lot of the burdens on our social system, services system. So there's the personal intrinsic, I'm giving back to my community. There's the I'm strengthening my community. There's the I'm helping drive the economic engine. There are a lot of factors. This is certainly in everyone's enlightened self-interest to be really serious about this and to find out what roles they play. for a variety of reasons.
Do you think your namesakes would have thought that this conversation would be happening in 2020?
I think that Dorothy was a very smart, capable person, very civic-minded, Dorothy Vanderpool. She was a school teacher in the Detroit school systems. I think if we tell stories about children in need, I think she could relate and understand where we are. Mr. Poole helped found Lehigh Valley Health Network and was interested in improving the health of the Lehigh Valley. And in the 1960s and the early 1970s, the thinking was build a really superior regional hospital and get really good physicians, which was true and still true. But he was a very, very, he always had his eye on the prize, but was willing to think about all of the pathways to get to that prize. And so if we presented the cogent argument that I think is really before us now to say social determinants of health has been in the literature for 28 years, we need to start thinking critically about how do we get serious about allocating resources and getting smarter about a collective approach to improving health. I think Mr. Poole would say, yeah, let's go in that direction.
Gentlemen, we have a few minutes left. If I gave you a magic wand and you could wave it and change anything under the heading of social determinants of health, what would you do?
I think we need to get smarter about cross-sector data analysis, not just looking at health or housing or education in a silo, but having the data that gives us a better picture. That's for the hard data. And then we need to do a better job of disaggregating that data at a community level, at a neighborhood level. Then we need to do a phenomenally better job. We need to work so much harder on understanding the life perspective of the people who live in those neighborhoods that are hardest hit, understand from a place of understanding and respect for people who live in those neighborhoods, and then not stop there, because that's all prelude to then thinking about, okay, now how do we take this information collectively and rethink how to redeploy resources so that we can have the impact we need to improve the social determinants of health,
and then
housing, education.
And then jump to the other side and say you're a person who might be feeling some effects of this pandemic. What should you do?
It's sort of difficult right now to try to, well, first of all, do all the things that you're supposed to do in terms of wearing a mask, social distancing, washing your hands, you know, all of those things. It's real. Science is real, first of all. And then second of all, human beings are social creatures. So how do you figure out how to maintain your network of friends? I know we're probably all getting a little tired of Zooming, but it's sometimes the best you can do. It's probably not a bad idea to rekindle some of those things, like, hey, if you've got a neighbor who has difficulty getting out to get groceries and things, but you've figured out how to get curbside pickup, maybe they might need a container of milk. So again, going back to what we were saying, you might be helping somebody else, but you're probably helping yourself get off the couch and stop watching television.
Edward Meehan and Ronald Dendis, thank you very much for helping us with the show. HealthBeat, we'll have another one coming up next month. As always, it's very interesting speaking with you gentlemen. Thank you very much for your participation again, and I would like to remind everybody that you are listening to WDIY. Have a good evening.
Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.